Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, good morning.
That's a very rare voice I haven't heard for thousands of years.
Good. It's good to reconnect on the importance of writing and translating Africa for the world and the world for Africa. And I'm more than thrilled to have someone of your rich experience at multiple levels of intervention on this very important topic. And I thought that before we proceed, maybe that you just take a minute or two to introduce yourself, give us a sort of background and experience on this theme.
Thank you very much. I'm really honored by this invitation. As you know, and as many people who know me know, I have been passionate about translation for a very long time. I'm a scholar in this field, and I'm also a practicing translator. But I've spent most of the last 30 or so years mainly promoting the practice of translation in relation to Africa for many reasons. But just to go back, I'm from Kenya, and I grew up in a multicultural and multiracial, if we could call it that, society. And I was therefore immersed from birth in a multilingual environment. So it's not something that happened to me, it's something that I am.
Good. Just to add that what I should have started with is that this is a conversation with Wangui Wagoro, a towering figure in the field of translation as pertains to Africa. She is a literary scholar and with much experience and insight to share on this important theme. So, do I move on now to my first question?
Yes, that will be lovely.
Good. Basically, I'm interested in you sharing your experiences and achievements as a writer and especially as a translator of writers just share that with us and do drop in a few names of those you've worked with and whose works you've foregrounded through your art and expertise so that people following up can relate to in substance.
Yes, my main works that are known to the world as translations are mainly Gogi's books. The children's books are where I began my career. They're in the Jaban Nene series from Kikuyu to English. And then I translated Veronique Tajo from French to English. And then I decided to experimentally work in my mother tongue. And that's what I've been doing quietly for many years, because it was harder and harder for me. And there's not a very large corpus of work from Kikuyu to English, which are my main languages. So I thought, since there's a large corpus of works in other languages that I speak, which are French, Italian, English, and English covers a large African and Black world, as does French, I thought it would be good to try and bring some of those works home as an example rather than as an activity and to encourage people to say, this can be done, let's do it. So that's why I've been very quiet, but there's not a lot of publications or publishers wanting to deal with this material now. because obviously of the economics of it, the curriculum isn't functioning as yet, but I thought I would do this for posterity.
Yeah, I noticed from you've translated both well-known scholars like Ngugi and Veronique Tadjo, as well as reaching out and translating works that are important but lesser known. Are there any things that jump up for you to share with us on how what it means to work at these different levels of your profession?
Yes, it's very exciting all across the spectrum. The high end, as we would call it, of those big names, it's a bit harder because they are critically engaged themselves in the work, and there's a whole scholarly world looking at you around them. For example, they're both award-winning authors, Ngugi and Veronique Tadjo. So you can't be too casual as a scholar translator around those kinds of authors, because you're aware that the reception will be more than just a casual reader. Then at the other spectrum, you have everyday readers who are also very engaged with the language, particularly the Gikuyu, which I've done experimentally. They're aware the language is rich, it's an oral language. So again, you're pushed to not be casual, because they'll call you out if you use an anglicism or you invent a word. They'll say, hang on, what are you saying there? Your Gikuyu is not very good. So you're forced to be proficient and knowledgeable and accurate and precise in both cultures and in both languages, and each have their own intellectual rigor, which must not be trivialized, because it's not book culture. It's the intellectual culture within the language is where it's rooted. So the scrutiny is very sharp and very contested for many reasons. So these two spaces are intellectually challenging and emotionally challenging spaces to operate in.
Yeah. Which would you say happens more, translation into African languages or translation from African languages into, say, European and other languages, in your experience? Speaking broadly about translation that pertains
very
to Africa.
Broadly, yeah, yeah. I would say, and it's not even sufficient, but the translations have mainly been from the European languages, mainly across the European languages like French and English, to be precise. That's the largest volume in our African context.
Yeah.
And very limited translation from our languages to European or other languages, although I know we could focus, for example, into like Muhammad Umar's book, which was translated into Arabic.
Yes.
So there are new trends rather than the Eurocentric trends that we are familiar with, and works have been translated into Japanese and to Indian languages and into Lusophone languages, because there's a black population in Brazil and so forth, and in Angola and Mozambique and Cape Verde. So we have to look outside the European frame. The other thing is that there's a very limited number of texts for translation in many of our African languages because of the history of coloniality, where our languages were not taught, and we haven't really had a generation that's encouraged to write in their mother tongues. But this trend is changing, only minuscule change, but it is happening, that now writers do want their works to go back to their communities. And I think I can give the example of this Cassava Press, who published the Valentine's Day anthology of love stories.
Yes.
And all the writers, except Binyavanga, have their stories translated into the communities from which they hail. I say except Binyavanga because he opted first for his stories to be published in Kiswahili.
Yeah,
which is not his mother tongue, but his national tongue. But we have subsequently, with his agreement before he passed away, translated the story into Kikuyu.
Yeah, I know this is what I'm about to ask is a big debate in translation, but I just wanted to touch on it before without dwelling in depth. The idea of ensuring content and meaning when one translates. To what extent is that a challenge in your experience and within the professional circles that you operate? I asked Mohamed Omar this question when I talked with him recently about ensuring that what is translated is actually what was written and meant by a given author, and not just perhaps the creative endeavors of an overly enthusiastic translator.
Well, the spectrum of translation is broad, as you know, from equivalence to adaptation, etc. So I don't think there's a pure form. The main purpose is to communicate a story in the best way that a translator can. Sometimes they don't have the skill, or they may make the decision because of the pressures of time and life to just make something that they love and dedicate their time to sharing the story in whatever form in another language. So I don't think there's a big moral thing, except around copyright. If the author is living and in agreement, then it's fine, however you render it. What is not good, and what I think may not be right, is if they now insert themselves into the narrative and start telling their own story in the midst of somebody else's story. But again, I personally have had a big debate about this, and I haven't resolved it yet, because in the African oral tradition, this idea of a pure narrative is not part of our oral tradition. Anybody can take any story and own it. So this is something we are yet to debate. But in the Western norm of copyright and intellectual property, then these variations from adaptation to transcreation to pure 100%, which of course does not exist, of translation. So it's gradations from zero, let's say, to 100. And I think I'd be more comfortable with anything in the IP world, anything that's over 90% accurate, I think is fair, because there's always human error. We'll never know the intention of the author, even the author half the time, like you are an author, and I've read some of your work, and what I read perhaps is not what you intended.
Absolutely.
I read it my own way. So I think this is a healthy conversation to have in our African context, where we are trying to locate the ownership of our work, and where money is owed to our creative endeavor may not actually be flowing to us as they should. So it is an important question, and I wouldn't like to trivialize it. And I don't want to encourage people to be too inventive until they're trained to be inventive, because there
absolutely.
Are ways.
Absolutely.
There are ways in which it can be done properly.
Yeah, and that flows neatly into my next question, which is your comment on the state of affairs on translation as a profession in Africa.
Yes, I don't know too much about it. I know that I've been trying to promote the activity, and most of the activity is happening in the African diaspora. That's where I've had the greatest response.
Yeah.
But I was very happy, and in South Africa, it's been going on for quite a long time because of the historical circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
So many people do know their mother tongues, because they were forced to learn in what were called Bantu languages. So they do have the written form of language alive, more alive than in other societies. But I learned happily that, and I'm Everybody goes back to this author, Chinua Achebe, has been translated into Luhya. And this is very exciting for me in Kenya.
Yeah.
And I think there's a growing awareness and experimentation across the continent. But the and then I think many countries now are adopting African languages for the curriculum.
Yeah.
And there will soon be a rush for publishing either in the mother tongues or in translation for the curriculum purposes. So I'm hopeful, but I don't believe the profession is sufficiently developed for this. So we need to do something about it.
Absolutely. And you've broached you've touched on some of what I'm about to ask next about the challenges and successes in translating into and from African languages, and you've mentioned some of it, both personal and professional experiences.
So did you say professional experiences?
Yes, I said what according to you are the challenges and successes in translating into and from African languages. And I would like you to share both your personal and professional experiences.
Well, in my case, I was very lucky that Heinemann, which was then East African Publishing House, in the form of Henry Chakava.
Yeah.
And Heinemann, prior to that, was already open to translation of what was called the African Writers Series. So many Francophone writers appeared in that list,
yeah.
Like Miriam Mabas' book. So there was already a culture and tradition between French, Francophone African literature and Anglophone, but more towards English rather than towards French, I would say. And that favored the Anglophone communities to be receptive to, you know, to translated literature.
Yeah.
And also, I think the Anglophones had an advantage of learning French more probably than the Franco, in a different mode, where yeah. We were reading West African, Maimouna and Ferdinand, Bia, etc. And okay. So for the curriculum purposes, these activities were happening because French and English were being taught in the different zones of contact. And also, I think there was a big change in the African curriculum in the 70s,
yeah.
Where there were conscious moves for an African literary conversation to happen in the curriculum, which is how I believe we came to read those amazing Francophone writers in English. So the translation has been happening, but at the creative end, this is not really happening, where translators like me wake up and want to do this for the joy of it.
Yeah.
And that's what I would like to see develop, a creative translation community and culture evolving across Africa. We have over 2,000 languages.
Yeah.
Imagine if we could hear these amazing stories from each of the cultures. So I've been working on something that I've been calling the Millennial Corpus is being established to teach African languages in schools. That will be a very wonderful foundation for the future. Secondly, those of us who are living, who carry these languages in our bodies, must not feel that there's some other people somewhere who will come and do this work for us. We have to give whatever gift we have in our bodies, whatever our parents, our grandparents gave to us, we must put it on record in the mother tongue, and if we are unable to do so, to do it in translation. Tell those stories in whatever language you know. Tell them, it's urgent. Our languages are endangered, so it's not even a luxury. And if we lose our lives, if we lose our languages, that's a whole library of the whole corpus of Africa gone.
Yeah.
We have the largest custodian of the multilingual corpus in our generation, those who are in their 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s, are the final corpus of access to the mother tongues. And if we do not do this work now, particularly those of us in our 60s and 70s, then we can wave goodbye to our knowledges. And our knowledges are not just about sexy stories. They're also about our knowledges, because it is through the griot tradition of passing on information that we are the libraries. It is stored in our brains, and we have to do this urgently. That is my message to African. Anybody who loves a story and who loves to share a story, please, please, let's do this work. It's difficult. Some of us are trained scholars, and we can help and support. Whoever wants any support, I'm available and accessible. I've set up something called the African Literary Translators Network. We have within the ALA, the TRACALA, which is the Translation Association of the African Literature Association, and many more associations are being born. And please create your own in your own countries, in your own languages. It mustn't all have a center somewhere, but let's network and share our experiences. That is my main message, but it is urgent. It's very, very urgent.
That's splendid. Any concluding word, broadly speaking?
My concluding word is that this work is rewarding. It is so rewarding. It is unbelievable. Choose any book that you write. We can help you to get the rights for it and share it with your community. The greatest gift you could give to your own culture is to take a story from another community and share it with your own community that you affiliate to. And the community you affiliate to does not have to be the one of your mother tongue. It can be one of your national tongue. But give a gift to your community. Give a gift to the world, because this is human patrimony. And the more we build it, the more we will be building our freedom. It is not just a simple question of telling stories. It's a question of shoring up our identity, our culture, and who we are. But let us do so mindful of inequality and injustice, and not to hide these things, but to tell them, and to tell them truthfully, towards a peaceful, just, and plural world, because our place as Africans is missing, because our stories are not being heard by us.
So thank you very much, Dr. Wangui Wagoro. It's been a pleasure to have this conversation with you on this very important theme.